Okay, so this is obviously a big topic. We'll scratch the surface a little bit. I'll be kitzer. So, first of all, it's blatantly obvious from the psukim and from Chazal that there is a lot of room for ethical interpretations of different parts of the Torah that we are not just allowed to make, but we're obligated to make. For example, we'll get to some of these psukim that I didn't include, but in the sources, but the well-known psukim of Kedoshim Tiyu. Okay, so the Torah is telling me, be holy, go. Right? Like, what does that mean? Be holy. Like, it's very hard to know. So obviously, there's going to be a tremendous amount of interpretation that's required there. Vasisa hayasher vahatov. All right, so you should do the right and the good, which is an excellent name for a sefer. And it's also, it's taken already by Rabbi Daniel Feldman, but the idea is that you're supposed to do what's right and good. I always thought you can always bring a raya to your side of an argument from that pasuk, meaning if you're arguing with somebody else, and you can say, there's a very sure pasuk that agrees with me. It says, Vasisha yasher v'atov, and what I'm saying is both yasher and tov, so by definition, I'm right. So it's very hard to, you know, it's very hard to know what the Torah was going for over there. So there's obviously going to be a lot of interpretation that's being used in these types of psukim. So we find such a thing in Chazal as well, where we're obligated to observe the world around us and specifically come to certain conclusions on one hand, and on the other hand, we have sources in Chazal which conflict with this and basically say that no, everything comes from the Torah, and you can't really do that. Or even if you are doing it, then it counts as Torah anyway. So, for example, source number one. So this is a well-known Gemara in Maseches Erev and Kuf Amid Beis on Rabbi Yochanan El Mali Lo Nitna Torah. Had the Torah not been given, Ayinu Lameid and Snius Mechatul VeGezel Minamala VeArayos Miyona. Right. So we have these different animals whom we would have been chayev to observe and therefore learn certain characteristics from them, with Snius from the cat and stealing from the ant. And monogamy from the dove, the derech eretz mitarnagol, an even proper way to cohabitate with one spouse. We would learn it from the chicken shemafayis v'achar kachbo, which is actually the subject of a discussion over there. But nevertheless, we could learn lessons from just observing the animal kingdom. So you know, if you've ever been up at 3 o'clock in the morning and the only thing that's interesting on is the animal kingdom show. So okay, so you're essentially doing what the Gemara is instructing, is learning how to act by observing the animal kingdom. That's one side of the coin, where basically we're told, had we not gotten the Torah, it would have been our job to figure these things out on our own. Whereas on the other hand, we have the famous Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, where Belozer ben Azariah Omer, im ein Torah, ein Derech Eretz. So obviously that's subject to a great number of interpretations amongst the Rishonim and Nachronim in terms of what does Derech Eretz even mean. But Pashup Shah, Derech Eretz, referring to proper behavior. So on one hand, we say that if we don't have Torah, we don't have Derech Eretz. And if the other hand, we don't have Derech Eretz, we don't have Torah. So you can say, well, it's just a Musar Vart, that if you don't act nicely, so what's your Torah really worth? But if all you're doing is acting nicely because you think it's a nice thing to do and you're just naturally a nice person, and it's not because that's what the Torah commands of you, so then your Derech Eretz doesn't really count for very much either. So you can see from there that there's this idea that the Derech Eretz has to stem from and be a basis of the Torah, otherwise it doesn't count. So you can say, well, I observed the animal kingdom and I learned snius and I learned, you know, to value other people's property and I learned how to be monogamous from the animals, but at the same time, if I don't believe that I'm doing this all because of this is what the Torah commands of me, then I'm not really doing anything worthwhile. And just in terms of the original quote, there's the original quote, Derech Eretz Kadma La Torah, which is the Netziv writes it a bunch of times in his parish. It's not exactly a medrash. There are like one or two midrashim that dance around the quotes. I gave you one on source number three, just because it's that's the more commonly used phrase for Ein Derech Eretz Ein Torah, which is Derech Eretz Kadma La Torah. So If you type the words Derech Eretz Kadma La Torah into the Bar Ilan, you won't get anything. So everyone's like, oh, you see, it's just made up. So it's not exactly just made up, because we have the Yalkut Shimoni where he writes, he talks about V'as Lad Acher Zu Gehenim Lishmor as Derech Zu Derech Eretz Milamit She Derech Eretz Kadma La Itzachayim V'Ein Eitz El Torah. So he's saying, you see from here that Derech Eretz preceded the Torah. So, and there's another medrash, but it comes up, it's like, Gedola Derech Eretz, Shekadma La Torah, 6,000 years, 600 years, I don't remember what it says exactly, but so there you get those words, Derech Eretz, Kadma La Torah, that they do exist, just not exactly in the format that people say, but nevertheless, it's a true statement that that Derech Eretz is the gateway into the Torah. So that's really the sort of, it's not even a dichotomy, but that's sort of the partnership that observing the natural world shares with keeping the Torah, that it's our job to sort of look around ourselves and see what we're supposed to do in order to form some kind of an ethical framework. And then we look at the Torah and we see how this fits into the world of Torah and which things the Torah actually values and which things the Torah rejects. And it's our job to sort of act accordingly. Similarly, we have this idea in the Gemara in Sanhedrin where they're talking about the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach sugyas. So the Gemara goes back and forth and they say, how do we know which of the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach we're actually chayev in? So we know what the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach are. It's easy to remember them. Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Dalet, and the big three, right? I have Avram and Achai, Birkas Hashem, Gezel, Dinim, and then Gilui Ra'ah, Shvichus Dam, and Vodazara. So we have those. And then if we knew one of those was among the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, and then it gets repeated at Har Sinai, so we know that it applies both to us and to the B'nei Noach. And then the Gemara rejects it, says, no, if it was repeated at Har Sinai, it's not one of the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach, and then the Gemara rejects that, because it says, no, the fact that we were told in the second one of the Aseres HaDibros, so, and obviously, B'nei Noach are also commanded not to worship Avodah Zarah, so therefore we know that it applies both to us and to the B'nai Noach. And then they say, what about the flip side? If something was said to the B'nai Noach and it was not repeated at Har Sinai, so then it would only apply to the Jews. We say, no, just the opposite. If it was not repeated at Har Sinai, so it's only for the B'nai Noach, and the Gemara says, no, and this is the line I was going for, Leka Meidam di Li Yisrael Shari Ulenachri Usur. There is no such thing that would be Usur for a Goy that a Jew would not be Chayavin, which is really the foundation of where I want to go from here, which is that it's our job to basically take the Sheva Mitzvos B'nai Noach as a basis, as a foundation for our activities, and build on top of it. And it's really something it's good to talk about during the Yemei Sefiras HaOmer, which is, why did the Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva all die? Mivnei shelo nagu kavod zeh v'zeh. We are not knowing kavod zeh v'zeh all the time, and it doesn't really affect us very much. So without fully answering the question, But the basis is that the idea of giving kavod to somebody else is basically recognizing that they're a tzelem elokim. If you look at somebody else and you say, this person is a tzelem elokim, is a human being, and it applies to all humans, and they are created in the image of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so mamela, we're going to give them a certain amount of basic kavod, right? And essentially, the way many mafarshim explain the idea of the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach is that really it's not, they're not, there isn't much to do about the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. What do you have? Avram and Achai, don't be a barbarian. If you want to eat meat, fine, but just kill it first. Birkas Hashem, don't be a complete kafui tov to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Gezel, understand property rights, respect somebody's right to own something else. Right? Dinim, set up a society. You're not living in caves anymore. You know, try to have a society where there are laws, you know, that you can agree upon. Right, and then you have Gilui Ra'ah, Shvichus Dam, and Avodah Zarah, also very fundamental, basic Tzelem Elokim type things, which is essentially a Kadosh Baruch Hu saying to humanity, you're a Tzelem Elokim, don't destroy that. Don't be lower than that. That's the baseline for all of humanity. And then the Jewish people are supposed to have 607 additional ways to elevate themselves above that. And the highest one of those is Talmud Torah, which is Keneged Kulam. So if you have a person who observes Kol Torah Kula and he learns Torah, so he's sort of building himself up and above that baseline that every human being is supposed to have. However, if while he's building himself up, he's also cracking the foundation because he's not being Noe Kavod Zeh B'zeh, meaning he doesn't understand that every single person around him is a Tzelem Elokim, worthy of his respect. So then it creates major, major problems. We just visited the 9/11 memorial. It was like It's a very unbelievable place, happens to be. If you've never been there, it's very worthwhile to go. But it was like, I remember, one of the last things we saw before we left was the video of the towers coming down. And it just, it's surreal. But that's the idea, that when the towers come down, part of the reason it was so incredible and it was so horrible was that they were so tall. They were built so high and so impressively that when they come down, it's so much more of a destruction. So for us, if we're not knowing Kavod Zev Zev, there's a crack in the foundation. You know, nobody wants to have a crack in the foundation of their house, but essentially dealing with a two-story building, you can fix the foundation. It doesn't really affect the house all that much. If there's a crack in the foundation of a skyscraper, so then the thing can come tumbling down and cause mass destruction. So that's really what happened to Talmidim and Rabbi Akiva. If they didn't have Kavod for one another, they were lacking in the fundamental idea of recognizing the Tzelem Elokim in somebody else. So in Eila, that causes the entire structure to come tumbling down, because they were building skyscrapers with their Torah. They were building skyscrapers with their observance of mitzvos. But the idea is really that you have to work from the ground up. You have to have that ethical foundation, which applies to all of humanity, and then you can sort of take the Torah and mitzvahs and build up on that. And that's l'chora what this Gemara is referring to, is that it's impossible that there would be anything that a Ben Noach would be mitzuva in that a Jew would not be mitzuva in. How could it be? A Jew is supposed to be building on that foundation, but he has to have the foundation first in order to build it up. And that's really what Rashi is explaining over here, where he says that there's nothing that a Jew is commanded in, where he says, no. When we were taken out of the klal of Bnei Noach, it was to sanctify us above and beyond, not to lower the standards, but to raise them. And that's basically stage one. Now, how does this play out in a normative halachic framework? So it's very easy to see how it plays out in Dinei Momonos. Dinei Momonos, most of the sources that you can actually find black on white, they're surrounding Dinei Momonos, like this Gemara in Meseches Bav Metzia Lamed Amid Beis, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, L'chorv Yushalayim Ela Shadanu Ba Din Torah. Right? The Yushalayim was destroyed because they did Dinei Torah. Right? Okay, I could think of worse things to do than a Din Torah. Right? It says, no. Ela Dine Demegiz to the Dine, what? They should just do arbitrary law. They shouldn't have any rules. They shouldn't follow the Torah. No. Ela Ema Shehem Mi Du Dine Amal Din Torah, Velo Avdu Lefnim Mishur Sadin. So he says they insisted on observing the regular halacha, and they wouldn't go Lefnim Mishur Sadin. They wouldn't ever engage in Pshara. They wouldn't ever engage in Lefnim Mishur Sadin. And that really is better than the Din Torah, according to this Gemara, where we're saying that it's the Din Torah is the baseline that you're supposed to observe. But as an ethical individual, you're supposed to recognize that there is a Lifnim Mishur HaSadin. There's a better way that you can do it that doesn't involve necessarily sticking it to the other guy, that even if you are the winner and you deserve to win, but in the end of the day, you might want to realize that you can do better. And the Torah sort of wants you to do better. It's not just that the Torah wants you to stay at that baseline of what the Din Torah requires. And this is also found famously in two places in the Ramban. The Ramban in the mitzvah of Kedoshim Ti, as we pointed out, one of the psukim that requires tremendous explanation because it's impossible to know what the Torah actually wants from you. So the Torah, the Ramban says, a person who wants to become a novel, Birshus HaTorah, person who wants to be a horrible person, but you can't point to any single halacha in Shulchan Aruch that he's actually violating. So if he wants to, you know, he wants to constantly stuff his face I always find it humorous, not that I don't partake, but I always find it humorous that when you see like ads for Pesach programs or whatever type of, you know, of things, it's just like, it'll talk about, we have 600 chefs on staff and you will not go one second without food being thrown on your face. And then it'll say on the bottom, like finest Hasidish shechitas, most kosher, you know, whatever, like, and it's, I was like, that's goofa, this Ramban. You know, like he's saying basically that you can only eat the best hashkachas, you can only eat, you know, you wash when you're born, you bench before you die, and that's it. A person would only, you know, would never approach what the individual thinks, you know, of Kedusha, what a person would have as a picture of Kiddusha in his mind, it would never have a hava mina to look like such an individual, and yet this person is following all the laws of the Torah. He says he keeps all the chumras and ilchas nida, he keeps all the harchakas, so what does he do? He marries 50 women, so he would never have to observe the halachas of nida with any of them, you know, at the same time. So he's always mutter to somebody. But he's observing all the chumras with all the other ones. So it doesn't make any sense in the framework of Kedoshim Tiyus. So the Ramban is saying you have to use that seichel, you have to have a sixth sense, and again, you have to look around the world and see what Kedusha is supposed to look like in order to sort of figure it out. And he says the same thing by the mitzvah of Asisa Yoshev HaTov in source number 8, that the Torah can't list off every proper behavior that a person is supposed to have. The Torah is, we have, you know, Chamisha Chumshei Torah, we have 24 books of Tanakh, and we're limited in time and space, and we can't just list off every single proper hanhaga. So the Torah lists off a number of them. He goes through what some of them has, Lo Sikol, Lo Sitor, Lo Silech Rachil, Lo Salman Adam Reachel, Lo Silkal Ocherish, Mepnei Seva Takum, and then it says, okay, and for all the remaining ones, Vasisa Yasha Vahatov, the Torah has given you a framework, and now apply that sort of hashkafa to the rest of your life and try to live along these lines. What's considered Yashar and Tov based on this? And last but not least, in the classical sources, we have the concept of Kofin Almidas Sedom. Right, the case over here is a little complicated, but if you get bored one day, you can check it out. What exactly the case they were dealing with in Gemara and Ksuvos was that, but basically, the way the Rishonim understand the Gemara is, if you find a case of Zenenev Ezelo Chaser Lechatchila, right? So then you can sort of force the person to engage you in that thing. If you have a situation where it's not hurting you in any way to help this person out, we would force you to help him out. Kofen Osah Midas Sdom. We're saying, the Torah includes description of what the people of Sodom were like for a reason, so that you learn how to not be like them, or how to be not like them, right? You want to avoid acting like a person from Sodom, and therefore the simplest way to do it, we say kofen also mida stom. If you have a case of zen and of zelo chaser, if it's not going to hurt you in any way, you have to help the other person out. That's a theme that we learn from the Torah by saying who the bad guys are. We don't want to be the bad guys, we want to be the good guys, and therefore we're told that we have to be the good guys in those scenarios. This is all in cases where it's very easy to sort of figure out what theme the Torah is going for. For the last couple of minutes, I just wanted to talk about cases where it's not easy to tell what the Torah is going for, and really a tremendous chiddush from the Dor Ravi, which I think it would really divide two major schools of thought. I was listening to Rabbi Leibowitz's by way of introduction shiur on the Dor Ravi today. So you mentioned that Rav Ruderman was not a big fan of the introduction of the Dor Ravi. I don't think it was for any of the reasons that were being discussed in that shiur. I think it was for this reason, but maybe not. But basically, the Dor Ravi is discussing this pasuk in source number 10. Ushmartem vaasisem kihi chachmaschem uvinaschem leenei haamim asher yishmaun es kol hachukim ha'ela. Right, so you got to keep the Torah. Why? Because this is your source of wisdom in the eyes of all of the nations in the world, the Amru, and they will say, right? And this is what Rashi says over here, Bezos techashu chachamim nevonim leinei ha'amim. Through this, through the laws of the Torah, you will be considered wise and discerning in the eyes of the nations of the world. It says, Rak am chacham nevon agoya gadol azeh. Right? This is such a wise and discerning nation. This is an amazing nation. Look how ethical they are. Look how moral they are. And it's really, it's a goal of the Torah that we should look good in the eyes of the rest of the nations. Generally speaking, and the Dor Ravi will address this, generally speaking, we like to, certainly as kids, tell people, oh, you have to act nicely and say thank you and things like that, because it'll be a big Kiddush Hashem. Right? It's not really for the reason of Kiddush Hashem. It's really because this is the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants you to act. So that doesn't sell as well. So you say, you call it, you say, you know, you have to act nicely in public because it's a Kiddush Hashem, right? Clean up after yourself because it's a Kiddush Hashem, and, which is also true. but it's not really the goal per se of how we're supposed to act, because this is what the Torah is supposed to try to do for a person, to make him a type of individual who exists on a higher plane. And when we do that, the nations of the world will pick up on it. So the Dor Ravi, who was a Rav in Hungary for many years, he eventually defected to the Mizrahi a little bit and moved to Eretz Yisrael. But he was a great grandson of the Chasam Sofer on his mother's side, and he has a sefer on Chulin. I think I looked on Hebrew Books. I think he also has two volumes of Shalos and Tshuvos, and some other Sfarim as well that are not on Hebrew Books. His most famous work is actually his introduction to the Sefer on Chulin. So I never actually learned the Sefer on Chulin, and I don't own the Sefer, but I was able to download the introduction from Hebrew Books. So I checked out some of the parts that deal with this particular thing. It's a very long introduction, and basically he points to a few different cases. He was dealing with a scenario where the government where he lived, I don't know if it was the Polish government or the Hungarian government, or somebody had outlawed the use of a ben pakua, which in those days was not like today, where you like growing flocks of ben pakua. But it was if you shecht the mother and you find a fetus inside the mother, so apparently that's very tasty. So the government, the secular governments, put out laws forbidding butchers from selling this kind of meat. They viewed it as immoral, and they said that you're not allowed to do business with the ben pakua. I don't know what they thought you had to do with it. I guess you had to throw it out, but it was considered disgusting in the eyes of the non-Jewish world. And the Jewish butchers were not interested in hearing about this. They said, we have been selling this as a delicacy for many years, and we're not interested in giving in to these goyish laws that they don't know what they're talking about. It's perfectly delicious, and they were continuing to sell it. So the Dor Ravi was upset about this, and writing a sefer on Chulin seemed like the right place to complain about something going on in the world of shechita and butchery, if that's a word. And so he's discussing this idea in general, and he says basically there are certain things that are deemed inedible by humanity. There are certain things deemed inedible. Whatever it is, if you eat it, you're disgusting. And he says, therefore, if a person eats these things, he's considered a disgusting person. And he goes so far as to say, it's actually worse than eating something which the Torah forbids. And it's a pretty, you know, pretty controversial thing to say. But he says, basically, that Hoya Adam over va'achlan yoser mitoav mimisha over alav mafurish batorah. Says you could say in the Torah, don't eat nevela. We'll get to that in a second. And if you eat these things, you're worse than a person who ate nevela. Ki kol mashen eskabel b'enei b'nei adam haneurim l'toeva afilu enem mafurish b'Torah l'Yisra ovo zeh gora min ha'over al-chukei ha-Torah. If a person violates this and eats something that the world considers to be disgusting, he is actually doing a worse act than someone who violates a lo sasesha b'Torah. Yeah.
Why is he so concerned with what other people are thinking and this whole subjective of view of morality and what people feel is good for consumption when we have a perfectly great Torah in order to tell us, you know, objectively what?
Right. So he started much earlier. He started a few pages ago talking about this idea of like finding loopholes in halacha. He quoted certain gemaras. If you use orla lav derech hana'asan, he says so. Some people learn the gemara. For example, there was all discussion of the gemara about using oil that was made of orla. That was orla oil. Excuse me. And getting hana'ah from it, not in the normal way, which is technically mutter. And he says, do you think the Torah wants you getting hana'ah from this in an abnormal way? Like, for example, if you eat chalev in an abnormal way, you're not going to get malchus for it. If you eat it in a normal way, I guess you would use it in a dish, or you would melt it down and eat it and you know, coat a pan with it or something like that. So then that would be you'd be chayev for that. But if you ate it raw, if you ate it congealed or in a way which the rest of the world would deem inedible, So that's lo derech hana'asan, and therefore you would not be chayiv anything for eating chaylev in such a way. So the Dor Ravi says, what do you think that the Torah wants you doing that? Why? Because the Torah didn't aser it, so the Mela, it's a great idea. He says, the Torah hates that. The Torah does not want you to do such a thing. Elamai, if you had a situation like the Gemara we were just talking about, where you use the Orla lav derech hana'asan because the person's daughter was sick and they wanted to benefit from it in such a way, so then that's considered a viable option. But to benefit from it in a way where you can go like this enough times to make it mutter, says that's exactly the opposite of what the Torah wants from you. So and then he's taking it to the next step, and he's saying the Torah is just basically setting up a framework of basics, and it's our job to go above and beyond those basics. The huge chiddush that he says really is, he says it's worse. Says, how could it be worse? It's an amazing thing that he wanted to say this. And he gives a mashal, he gives a few mashalim. Number one is, he says that a person is not allowed to wear women's clothing. You know, no matter what he thinks he is, he's not allowed to, a male is not allowed to wear female clothing. And so a guy walks out of the house with a dress. So really he's doing a serious avera. So he says, but what's the flip? What's the other side of the coin? Let's say his house is on fire. I don't know. So the only thing he can find is his wife's dress. So he puts on the wife's dress. He was just coming out of the shower. He had nothing to wear. So he grabs a dress and he puts it on and he runs out of the house. He says, doesn't say anywhere in the Torah you're not allowed to run around naked. So he says, he should have run out naked. He says, no way. You're not supposed to run out of the house naked rather than putting on a dress. So he says, do you think the Torah thinks it? The whole world knows that only crazy people run around naked. He says, you'd be considered the lowliest of the low if you walked out naked. If you walked out with a dress, you know, back in the day, you'd just be considered a really strange person. You know, maybe they'll make you the director of the FBI or something. I don't know. But you'd just be considered a strange person. You wouldn't be considered a horrible human being. A guy runs around naked. He'd be considered the lowest of the low. So he says it's worse. It doesn't say anywhere in the Torah you're not allowed to do it. He says it's worse to run outside naked than it would be to run outside wearing a dress. Again, this is his idea. And he goes through another one, which is I've heard about before, and I did a little bit. I didn't do enough homework to try to find the actual thing. I was told this was a machlokus between the two Rosh Yeshiva of Gush, between Rav Aaron and Rav Amital, about this exact subject. Some guy gets stranded on a desert island, and the only thing he can eat, on one hand, he can eat the other people on the plane or the boat, you know, who didn't make it, or he can eat nevela. He does not have access to basar shchuta. He doesn't say this desert island example, but he just says, let's say you have a chola sheyesh bo sakana, who needs to eat non-kosher in order to live. I actually fulfilled my joke about going overtime, sorry. So he needs to eat nevela in order to live, or he can eat human flesh. So which one is the better choice? So halachically, it's human flesh. The Rambam holds it's an issur aseh to eat human flesh, and the Rashba holds it's an issur derabanan. So he says, okay, you have an issur deraisa of nevela, you have an issur derabanan of cannibalism. So, okay, go for the cannibalism. He's like, absolutely impossible to say such a thing. He's like, the whole world knows cannibalism is an abhorrent behavior, and it is impossible to say that a person should eat human flesh over a McDonald's cheeseburger. The whole world eats McDonald's cheeseburgers, whether they're willing to admit it or not. Nobody eats human flesh. If you're considered subhuman if you eat human flesh. So he says, there's no way the Torah wants you eating human flesh just because it didn't. Come right out and tell you what the punishment is going to be if you do it, doesn't mean that the Torah thinks it's a great idea. It just means the Torah didn't beferish aser it, you know, in terms of that. And that was his other mashal. And then he says, because of this reason, he thinks that it is absolutely unacceptable for these Jewish butchers to continue selling the ben pakua, to sell the fetuses that are coming out of these shchitos. He thinks that if the world has considered this to be unacceptable, it is unacceptable, you know, in our eyes as well. The problem with all of this really is that there are so few things that really fit the mold. Meaning, number one, do you even agree with what he's saying? I think any Brisker would cringe at this thought. Like to say that, you know, you live in a Brisker reality. You live in a halachic reality. The old Brisker joke where the kid Nebuch spills hot tea on his arm and he's crying to his father, Abba, I hurt my arm. So the Brisker fellow says to him, what are you talking about? It's in a cliche. It doesn't hurt at all. You know, so if you live in the halachic reality, so it says that's gufa, our driving moral ethic is the halacha. So if the halacha doesn't say something is wrong and you want to come along and say I think it's wrong, that's lovely that you think that and feel free not to do it, but that's not, you know, that's not what the Torah says about you. You know, slavery is a good example of that, where there's no mitzvah to ever own slaves. So the Torah talks about slavery because that's what they used to have in those days. They had slaves. So these are the halachas of how you're kone a slave, and this is how you treat your slave, etc., etc. But in the end of the day, you know, one could argue that nowadays it's considered abhorrent to own slaves, and the Dor Ravi Lechora would say that is absolutely worse than violating Yisurim Doraisa to purchase a slave, to own a slave in any way, shape, or form. Whereas I think a person who lives, you know, strict within a strict halachic framework would say, no, why would you tell me something that the Torah seems to approve of? Is you know, it's not a racial issue because we're allowed to own Jewish slaves also. So it's not, you know, so the Torah doesn't disapprove of slavery. So you decided because the North won the war that you don't like slavery. So okay, so the South almost won the war. So then slavery would have been moral. You know, it's really hard to say what the concrete ethics of society. I think cannibalism is one that, you know, we're pretty good on. But let's say in all the European countries they wanted to outlaw shechita. But let's say they would have taken it a step further and they would have wanted to outlaw eating of all meat. Let's say they just decided every pita finally won the day and they you know, now nobody's allowed to eat meat. So does that become usur min haTorah to eat meat at that point? You know, you could argue that certainly bizman habayis it wouldn't be usur, but maybe until korbanos are brought back, you could say that it's usur to eat meat according to that line of reasoning. It's so hard. Meaning, are the same people who say that you're not allowed to eat the fetus of an animal, what do they say how you treat a fetus of a human being? You know, that all of a sudden, like, the people who hold that they have the moral high ground are the ones who say, yeah, whatever, you know, as long as the baby can't yell at you back, so then you can do whatever you want to it. You know, so that's very, very hard to know what to do with all of these ideas, but clearly, I'm sorry for going over, but clearly the one thing the Torah does demand of us is to observe the world around us and to draw what the Torah deems to be an ethical and a moral high ground, and to always view ourselves as above and beyond what the average human being is trying to do, and never to say, that type of hanhaga tova, that's for the goyim, because they don't have a Torah, so mela, they have to act nicely in those areas, but we don't have to act nicely in these areas because we have the Torah. No, we're supposed to act nicely in those areas, and then take the Torah above and beyond what everyone else has to create even a greater level of morality for the world to see. Yeah.